the past couple of weeks and even this conference have been dominated by rows over the axing of the winter fuel payments for millions of pensioners, taking freebies from donors, how much Sue Gray's paid. In a way, Patrick, it feels like that's been allowed to dominate in the absence of sort of proactive news generation by the government.
Well, it's an interesting question, which I put to a cabinet minister a couple of days ago. It was, what would we be talking about right now if the freebie story didn't exist, if there was no division or no reports of division in Downing Street, if we weren't banging on about Sue Gray? And I think cabinet ministers themselves would admit, actually, it's quite hard to discern what the answer would be. Because we're waiting for the budget next month where, let's be honest, lots of the politics of the next year will be set. And so Keir Starmer has to show that this is government with direction, that he has things to say, because otherwise this has all been a nice talking shop for people in the Labour Party to pat themselves on the back, but it has left us none the wiser about what they're actually going to do in government.
For a party that prided itself, Katie, on being the most ready government ever, the most planning, we've got Sue Gray who knows how government works. Now they keep telling us, look, we've only been in government for a few weeks, it's teething problems, they're still learning the ropes. And if you look at the opinion polls, it suggests that the public aren't as willing to give the benefit of the doubt as perhaps the government hopes.
Yeah, I think I think they're realising the difficulties from going from opposition to government, and sometimes it feels as though they still have the opposition approach, partly because they've been there for so long. And that means that, if you're in government, you can just make an announcement and everyone is going to follow it because you are the government. But yet, they seem to be not really going forward. And, they used to, over the recess, have, really active grids to try and get one over on the Tories. But now they're in government, it feels as though they've stopped doing that. Mm. At actually a time when it would be the right thing to do, because when Labour politicians say, oh, you're all so trivial as journalists, personality politics, to Patrick's point, give journalists some other things to work with. Otherwise, what tends to happen is the narrative slips away from you to back onto the media's territory.
And also, as you know, Matt, we're not making this up. We're not, we do have some sense of professional pride. We'd love to be talking about lofty things and weighty policy proposals.
Yeah, a huffing great big new news story, a policy or something.
Yeah,
would,
about the direction of the country.
Headlines. Well, good afternoon. If you are just joining us, it's just, 2 minutes past two here on Five Live. It's Matt Trotty coming to you live from the Labour Party conference in Liverpool. We'll bring you Keir Starmer's speech in full in just a moment. Just as soon as it's, you'll be astonished to hear, much like last week with Ed Davey, we were promised a 2 o'clock prompt start. And they haven't started yet.
He's deciding which suit to wear.
But he's waiting for it to be delivered, presumably. We'll bring you the speech in full in just a moment, and then we'll bring you the best analysis and reaction afterwards. Keen to get your views on it as well. Health Secretary Wes Streeting's due to pop in, so we'll hear from him as well. And as ever, I'm continuing my search for a Five Live listener in every constituency to become a member of Matt's Parliament. Today, I did draw the balls earlier, expecting a prompt start on the speech. So the constituency we're looking for today is South Basildon and East Thurrock. South Basildon and East Thurrock. Have you got any connection, any trivia you can offer up on that, Patrick?
I don't know which bit of Basildon Depeche Mode were from, but Vince Clark could be in touch.
I'm going to say it doesn't matter. We'll be playing Depeche Mode before the end of the show. Katie, anything on South Basildon and East Thurrock you want to offer up?
Not right now. I'll come back to once my phone starts getting
your
signal.
Best claim to connect, maybe you're there right now. Maybe you are driving there on holiday, as someone was yesterday. Did you go on holiday to South Basildon?
No, I did interview the MP for there recently.
There,
and that is the new Reform MP, James McMurdoch, who is the accidental MP. They really, in Reform, targeted just those four seats, and he was the paper candidate.
He was the one
who
they
then, after three recounts, was declared the winner, I think, to the surprise of maybe his own family.
Some top knowledge. So, your best claim to South Basildon and East Thurrock, you can text me 85058 or WhatsApp 08085 909 693. Same numbers, of course, for your reaction to Keir Starmer's speech. Any questions about it as we're listening to it? The photographers are all in place in front of the stage. Keir Starmer speaking in front of, what is it, a sort of Union Jack meets Labour magenta backdrop?
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, the Union Jack. Remember Ed Miliband used to put the Union Jack in funny colours?
Yeah.
That is something Keir Starmer's campaign team hate nothing more than, disrespecting the flag. Who's this young man stepping about onto the stage?
So there's a young man who's introducing Keir Starmer on the stage, which means I think the clock's ticking now. It's about 3 minutes to go. On the lectern, change begins, which is a bit more upbeat, Patrick, than the things are going to get worse before they get better that we had from Keir Starmer over the summer.
Well, as Katie said, it speaks to that sense of purpose that they do have something to offer beyond change, which was the single word slogan. In Cabinet last week, they were discussing what change beginning might look like, and also we'll expect to hear from Keir Starmer what the government has done in its past 12 weeks or so. The Cabinet were presented with a list of everything they'd achieved in the past 12 weeks, all the things they've done. And so Keir Starmer trying to reclaim the narrative from, oh, it's all very scary and bad and the Tories have ruined everything and we can't possibly do anything and our hands are tied. That's part of the message you'll be giving today.
It's interesting because all the people we've had on the show and on Five Live generally, Katie, they keep talking about all of the things we've done. And a lot of those cases, it's publishing legislation which hasn't been passed yet, or it's announcing something that they said they were doing in the manner... You know, there's re-announcing what you're going to do, and then there's visible change that people can feel and recognise, and clearly that's going to take much longer.
Yeah, and I had a frank exchange with a Labour MP on this saying, why aren't you writing about these things? And I said, you know, what things? Like GB energy, nationalisation of the railways and so forth. But as you say, they're all things that they promised to do in the manifesto that they're now working on saying what they did. It's not really quite the same as saying we've achieved all these things. And also the proof is in the pudding on, you know, for example, GB energy and whether it can really do those things. It's not really yet the time, I think, to pat yourself on the back on it.
Yeah, the fact that you've made a speech in government about the thing you said you were going to do in opposition doesn't mean that anything's happened.
Yeah, all that a bill has passed a second reading when you have a huge majority, you know.
But then it's also interesting because they haven't, you know, the trick in politics is just to keep on talking about the same part. It's only when people like us are sick of talking about a policy or an announcement is when it's finally getting cut through. And the fact that they announced something in July, you know, they say, why aren't you writing about that now? It's like, well, because you haven't done anything on that since, Patrick.
No, absolutely. And also, you know, to some degree, let's be fair, they've been in power for 12 weeks. 6 of weeks was recess. Six of that was the summer recess. Now we can have a debate, I expect not now, about whether politicians should take 6 weeks off. The extent to which they would have achieved anything in 12 weeks is debatable. But they do need to give a clearer sense of purpose because the message from the government has been pretty gloomy, pretty negative thus far.
So, Katie, I'm sort of reflecting back on... There's been lots of comparisons to when David Cameron was Prime Minister and they've been saying we're not doing Cameron-style austerity. But those party conferences, the David Cameron, George Osborne party conferences, was sort of awash with news. They were, you know, there were announcements into speeches, there were announcements out of speeches. That just doesn't... It just hasn't felt like that here.
There's been some very cheap speeches. Normally, you know, you're having those fights into the, you know, the final moment about what's going on the auto queue, what you can announce. And there's been, you know, very, very thin announcements. Because, of course, the big issue that they have, well, a few issues, but the budget is still to come. And that means that they're, you know, they're not really in a position to announce much in terms of new funding or policy things because Rachel Reeves is working on the final touches of the budget from this conference.
Yeah.
And I think that's partly why we keep saying, oh, but what's the real story? What's the real news? Well, there's a fiscal event, which means that they can't really do much before then, but they have to be here.
But that is something that's in their own gift.
Yeah, and that was a choice.
They've chosen to do the budget at the end of the month.
Well, yeah, I had a very... I was going to say a very good conversation. It wasn't that good. A very interesting conversation.
Better than this one?
This is a great conversation. I now realise the very was meant to refer to my own source, which is very very boastful of me. I had a conversation with someone who works in Downing Street.
Patrick, we're going to have to interrupt this great conversation. It's Patrick McGuire for The Times, Katie Balls for The Spectator. Matt Jolly with you live on Five Live as Keir Starmer delivers his first speech at conference as Prime Minister.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much, conference. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Matthew, for that introduction. That was really fantastic. You've broken through to university, but you stood on this stage, age 21, to do something you've never done before and not an easy thing to do. That was fantastic. And thank you, conference. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. Thank you, conference, for everything you have done to fulfil the basic duty of our party, our clause one, so we can return this great nation to the service of working people. Thank you, conference. People said we couldn't do it, but we did, and we did it together. And look at this now, a record-breaking conference, the biggest attendance ever in our history. And such a far cry from my first conference speech to a live audience of one. The cameraman, socially distanced in an arts centre in Doncaster. Remember that? Don't worry, most people don't. Not even the cameraman. But I bet you do remember the one the year later conference in Brighton, 3 years ago. The turning of the tide. The fight for the heart and soul of this party. People said we were going too far. People said we were going too fast. They didn't want to face the country. They wanted to go back to a comfort zone, take the easier road to nowhere, duck the challenge of change. But we stood firm, conference. We stood together, conference, and we won. So take pride in your victory. Take pride that Labour won in every single region in England. Take pride that Labour won in Wales. Take pride that Labour won in Scotland. But never forget that this opportunity is only here because we changed the party. Country first, party second. That isn't a slogan. It's the foundation of this project. A pact with working people we must fulfil to retain the privilege of serving their interests on economic stability, national security, wealth creation, protecting our borders, rooting out anti-Semitism, standing with NATO and Ukraine. The changes we made are permanent, irreversible. And the work of service never stops. Country first, party second. But conference, for many people in this city, the speech they may remember was the one here 2 years ago. Because that's when I promised, or on this stage, that if I ever had the privilege to serve our country as Prime Minister, one of my first acts would be to bring in a Hillsborough law, a duty of candour. A law for Liverpool, a law for the 97, a law that people shouldn't have had to fight so hard to get, that will be delivered by this Labour government. It's also a law for the sub-postmasters in the Horizon scandal, the victims of infected blood, Windrush, Grenfell Tower, and all the countless injustices over the years suffered by working people at the hands of those who were supposed to serve them. Truth and justice concealed behind the closed ranks of the state. And conference, this is the meaning of clause one. Because today I can confirm that the duty of candour will apply to public authorities and public servants, the bill will include criminal sanctions, and that the Hillsborough law will be introduced to Parliament before the next anniversary in April. It's work that shows how a government of service must act in everything it does. Our driving purpose, to show to the working people of this country that politics can be a force for good. Politics can be on the side of truth and justice. Politics can secure a better life for your family through the steady but uncompromising work of service. Because service is the responsibility and opportunity of power, the precondition for hope, the bond of respect that can unite a country, bind us to the politics of national renewal. Service doesn't mean we'll get everything right. It doesn't mean everyone will agree. But it does mean we understand that every decision we take together, and that it is our duty to the British people to face up to necessary decisions in their interests. And I mean, conference, you know me by now. So you know, all those shouts and bellows, the bad faith advice from people who still hanker for the politics of noisy performance, the weak and cowardly fantasy of populism, it's water off a duck's back. Mere glitter on a shirt cuff. It's never distracted me before, and it won't distract me now. This is a long-term project. I've never pretended otherwise. But conference, make no mistake. The work of change has begun. The patient, calm, determined era of politics as service has begun. Planning reformed, doctors back in theatre, new solar projects, new offshore wind projects, the onshore ban lifted, Great British Energy launched, one-word Ofsted judgments ended, a border security command, a national wealth fund, getting Britain building again, the Renters Reform Bill, stopping no-fault evictions, and the Railway Services Bill, bringing railways back into public ownership. And we're only just getting started. A crackdown on knife crime, a real living wage, a modern industrial strategy, a 10-year plan for our NHS, devolution to our nation's regions and cities, the biggest levelling up of workers' rights in a generation, more teachers, more neighbourhood police, more operations, rebuilding our public services. Change has begun. And every single one a necessary step on a longer journey. Five national missions that will deliver the higher growth, the safer streets, the cleaner energy, the greater opportunities, the healthier society that I know the British people want and need, the mandate that we won. But also something even more precious. Our economy stabilised. The foundations of this country fixed. Tory rot cleared away. So brick by brick, we can build a new home. A better home. Built to last. Built with pride. But above all, built together. A nation rebalanced so that it once again serves the interests of working people. And through the power unleashed by that process, a renewal of who we are. A country that gives equal voice to every person. A country that won't expect you to change who you are just to get on. A country that doesn't just work for you and your family, but one that recognises you, that sees you and respects you as part of our story. A Britain that belongs to you. Because, make no mistake, that is the Britain we are building. Change isn't a few lines on a graph moving in the right direction. Change isn't a good Labour policy or two delivered, while the broader settlement remains untouched. No, change must mean nothing less than national renewal. Not a return to the old ways, nor a new path entirely, but a rediscovery in the full glare of the future of who we are. The trouble is, Conference, just as we found with the Labour Party 4 years ago, Britain is no longer sure of itself. Our story is uncertain. The hope beaten out of us. There's pride, of course there is. Pride in our communities, especially. And there's respect, too, all around the world. Trust me, nobody anywhere doubts that this is a great nation, a nation known for our creativity, our artistic skill, our scientific genius, and, of course, our pragmatism. Quality that, combined with the industry and pride of working people, have not just rewritten our own story, but also that of the world. We could do that again. In fact, we must. Technology, climate change, the ageing population, the movement of people. This is a time when great forces demand a decisive government prepared to face the future. We can see that again in the Middle East today. So I call again for restraint and de-escalation at the border between Lebanon and Israel. Again, all parties to pull back from the brink. I call again for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza, the return of the sausages, the hostages, and a recommitment to the two-state solution. A recognised Palestinian state alongside a safe and secure Israel. And that's the message I will take to the UN General Assembly when I travel there later today. Alongside our steadfast support for Ukraine in the face of Russian aggression. And in this uncertain world, I also pay tribute to our armed forces for all they do to keep Britain safe. But, Conference, strength in this dangerous world depends on strength at home. And yet, look at our country. Look at our country. Do you see a Britain where people feel, with the certainty that they deserve, that the future will be better for their children? Because when I was growing up, that's what we believed. People of a completely ordinary working-class background like mine. We took it for granted. We built our lives around it. But that is not the country we inherited in July. That confidence, that certainty, it's brittle and fragile. And so we have to restore it. That is the mandate we won, the meaning of change. And it all comes back to that question. Can politics be a force for good in people's lives? There's no time to waste wondering why people think politics has failed. We have to show what it can do for their lives. Restore, after 14 years of chaos, faith in the values that have always guided this nation. The stability, moderation, the common sense, keeping a cool head, staying the course, facing the future, the defiance of ambition, the determination of service, and above all, our faith, no matter the challenge, in practical solutions that work. Not the easy answers that may well move a crowd, but do not move a nation forward. No conference. We know that way lies ruin. We've seen it in our party, and we changed it. And for 14 years, against our country's best traditions, we've seen it in Britain. And now we must change that too. We must build a new Britain, built from that age-old spirit of creativity and enterprise, the pride and ambition of working people, that when matched by a government of service, a decisive government, a government prepared to use its powers for justice, opportunity and equal respect, can deliver a Britain that belongs to you. A Britain that belongs to you because politics sees public service as a privilege, not privilege as an entitlement to public service. A Britain that belongs to you because government is mission-driven and serious, clear, measurable targets, progress displayed publicly, so every single person in this country can judge our performance on actions, not words. A Britain that belongs to you because we maintain our focus at all times on fixing those foundations for working people, those five national missions, providing the security and control they need, but also protecting us from the whims of Westminster, making sure that we don't get blown off course. And a Britain that belongs to you because we came together and together we built it. Because this has to be a partnership. We won't achieve our missions alone. I understand the power and responsibility of government, the way it can make or break a life. When you're chief prosecutor, when you look into the eyes of victims who've lost everything, parents whose daughter was raped and murdered, as I did with Penny and John, trust me, you learn about what government can and must do. And I also know from the campaigners who have inspired me, Pooja and Nikita Kanda, Fegan Murray, people who fight tirelessly against murder and terrorism so no other family will suffer their awful pain. Nathaniel Dye, who fights for a better NHS so no other person will suffer his fatal late cancer diagnosis. The families and survivors of Grenfell Tower, whose dignity for 7 years held up a mirror to this nation and asked us, do we really give everyone an equal voice? They have all shown that the difference between service and government, true service, is that service must listen to people far beyond the walls of the state and empower them to make our country better. Because trust me, that is without question the quickest way to clear away the Tory rot and build that Britain that belongs to you. And so change begins because there is another injustice hiding in plain sight in our streets, in every town and city in this country. People who were prepared to make the ultimate sacrifice for our nation, who put their lives on the line to protect all of us, but who will not have a safe place to sleep tonight. We cannot stand by and let this happen anymore. So today I can announce that this government will respect that service. We will repay those who served us and house all veterans in housing need. Homes will be there for heroes.
Thank you.
And because we've started the hard yards of planning reform, because we're facing up to decisions ignored for years, because we're introducing new planning passports that will turbocharge house building in our inner cities, we can make the very same promise to other people at risk of homelessness. Young care leavers, victims of domestic abuse. They will have the security they deserve. They will have a roof over their head because Britain belongs to them. And another Think Conference, another promise kept. We said GB Energy, our publicly owned national champion, the vehicle that will drive forward our mission on clean energy, we said it belonged in Scotland. And it does. But the truth is, it could only really ever be based in one place in Scotland. So today I can confirm that the future of British energy will be powered as it has been for decades by the talent and skills of the working people in the Granite City with GB Energy based in Aberdeen. This is how the work of change happens. A decisive mission-led government moving our country forward step by step, focused on a long-term plan. That first, we stabilise our economy. Second, we fix the foundation. And third, we build with pride and determination a Britain that belongs to you. But it will be hard. That's not rhetoric. It's reality. It's not just that financial black hole. The £22 billion of unfunded spending commitments concealed from our country by the Tories. It's not just the societal black hole. Our public services decimated. Communities held together with little more than goodwill. It's also the political black hole. Because the politics of national renewal, they're collective. They involve a shared struggle, a project that says to everyone, this will be tough in the short term, but in the long term, it's the right thing to do for our country. And we all benefit from that. To coin a phrase, we're all in it together. But that's just it, isn't it? People have heard it all before, and they listened. I ran a public service in the early days of austerity. People did everything asked of them to find a way forward. They did it in the pandemic as well. Saved the lives of people they will never meet, all while their government broke the very rules that they followed. And so people ask us now, as we seek patience in pursuit of national renewal, what will we get to show for it? I understand that. After all, what they're used to is a lie, an act, a charade, a performance. You may call it populism. Many people do. But I prefer to call it the politics of easy answers. Because at its core, that's what it is. A deliberate refusal to countenance tough decisions. Because the political pain is just too much. Party first, country second. Take Rwanda. A policy they knew from the beginning would never work. was never supposed to work. £700 million of your money frittered away on something that was never a credible option. Because politically, it was an easier answer. And just look at the difference you can make if you bring the curtain down on the show. A 23% increase in returns of people who have no right to be here compared with last summer. But it's not just Rwanda. It was the same story on everything. Energy security, the housing crisis, telling people they're tough on crime without building enough prison places. 14 years of performance. 14 years of exploiting problems, not solving them. Mining the pits of division, searching them for conflict, fixing your attention on those issues, not on growth, technology, climate change, public services, the ageing population, the cost of living crisis, or any of the challenges that this country desperately needed to face up to. Well, those challenges are still here, conference. And we are facing up to them. But do not forget what they did. And do not let them attempt to shift the blame, because the state of our country is on them. Why must we release prisoners early? Because the Tories served themselves. Why are our public services on their knees? Because the Tories served themselves. Why is crime routinely unpunished? Our rivers polluted. Borders insecure, school roofs crumbling, child poverty rampant, nothing seems to work. Our public finances broken because for 14 years, the Tories performed the politics of easy answers rather than use the power of government to serve our country. Yet still those wounds of trust must be healed. Still that question calls to us. What will we get to show for it? So let me answer that directly and address anyone nervous about the difficult road ahead. Because I know this country is exhausted by and with politics. I know that the cost of living crisis drew a veil over the joy and wonder in our lives, and that people want respite and relief, may even have voted Labour for that reason. So first, let me be clear. Our project has not and never will change. I changed the Labour Party to restore it to the service of working people, and that is exactly what we will do for Britain. But I will not do it with easy answers. I will not do it with false hope. Not now, not ever. That's how we got here in the first place. So I know, after everything you've been through, how hard it is to hear a politician ask for more. But deep down, I think you also know that our country does need a long-term plan. And that we can't turn back. The state of our country is real. However, I would also say this. This is a government of service. And that means, whether we agree or not, I will always treat you with the respect of candour, not the distraction of bluster. And the truth is that if we take tough, long-term decisions now, if we stick to the driving purpose behind everything we do, higher economic growth, so living standards rise in every community, our NHS facing the future, waiting lists at your hospital down, safer streets in your community, stronger borders, more opportunities for your children, clean British energy powering your home, then that light at the end of this tunnel, that Britain that belongs to you, we get there much more quickly. And look, I understand that many of the decisions we must take will be unpopular. If they were popular, they'd be easy. But the cost of filling that black hole in our public finances, that will be shared fairly. We will get the welfare build out because we will tackle long-term sickness and support people back to work. We will make every penny work for you because we will root out waste and go over tax avoiders. There will be no stone left unturned, no innovation ignored, no return to Tory austerity. We will rebuild our public service, protect working people, and do this in a Labour way, and that is a promise. And if you can't take that on faith, perhaps because you're concerned about the winter fuel allowance, then I get that. As I say, if this path were popular or easy, we'd have walked it already. But the risk of showing to the world, as the Tories did, that this country does not fund its policies properly, that is a risk we can never take again. Stabilising our economy is the first step of this long-term plan. The only way we keep prices down, cut NHS waiting lists, and secure the triple lock so that every pensioner in this country, every pensioner, will be better off with Labour. But more broadly, I also say this, that as we take on those massive challenges the Tories ignored, the time is long overdue for politicians to level with you about the trade-offs this country faces. Because if the last few years have shown us anything, it's that if you bury your head because things are difficult, your country goes backwards. So if we want justice to be served, some communities must live close to new prisons. If we want to maintain support for the welfare state, then we will legislate to stop benefit fraud, do everything we can to tackle worklessness. If we want cheaper electricity, we need new pylons overground. Otherwise, the burden on taxpayers is too much. If we want home ownership to be a credible aspiration for our children, then every community has a duty to contribute to that purpose. If we want to tackle... And if we want to tackle illegal migration seriously, we can't pretend that there's a magical process that allows you to return people here unlawfully without accepting that process will also grant some people asylum. And if we're serious about levelling up, then we must be proud to be the party of wealth creation, unashamed to partner with the private sector, and perhaps most importantly of all, that just because we all want low tax and good public services, that does not mean that the iron law of properly funding policies can be ignored. Because it can't. We've seen the damage that that does. And I will not let that happen again. I will not let Tory economic recklessness hold back the working people of this country. And let me tell you something else I won't let happen. I will never let a minority of violent, racist thugs terrorise our communities. Look, I have always accepted that concerns about immigration are legitimate. It is, as point of fact, the policy of this government to reduce both net migration and our economic dependency upon it. I have never thought we should be relaxed about some sectors importing labour when there are millions of young people, ambitious and highly talented, who are desperate to work and contribute to their community. And trust me, there are plenty of examples of apprenticeship starts going down at the very same time that visa application for the same skills are going up. So we will get tough on this. But at the same time, we'll also get our skills system right. We've got to give businesses more flexibility to adapt to real training needs and also unlock the pride, the ambition, the pull of the badge on the shirt that young people feel when building a future not just for themselves but for their community. So we will introduce new foundation apprenticeships, rebalance funding in our training system back to young people, align that with what businesses really need. The first step to a youth guarantee that will eradicate inactivity and unemployment for our young people once and for all. But conference, whatever anyone thinks about immigration, I will never accept the argument made not just by the usual suspects, but by people who should have known better, who said that millions of people concerned about immigration are one and the same thing as the people who smashed up businesses, who targeted mosques, attempted to burn refugees, scrawled racist graffiti over walls, Nazi salutes at the cenotaph, attacked NHS nurses, and told people with different coloured skin, people who contribute here, people who grew up here, that they should go home? No. No. No conference. No conference. People concerned about immigration were not doing that because they understand that this country, this democratic country, is built on the rule of law, the ballot box, the common understanding that we debate our differences, we do not settle them with violent thuggery, and racism is vile. Conference. So to those who equivocate about this, I simply say the country sees you and it rejects you. And to those who say that the only way to love your country is to hate your neighbour because they look different, I say not only do we reject you, we know that you will never win. Because the British values we stand for, not just the rule of law, but a love for this country and our neighbours, the respect for difference under the same flag that is stronger than bricks, and you know it. It's what you cannot stand about our country, our reasonable, tolerant country, but it's absolutely who we are. No conference. The debate is not about the worth of migrants. That is toxic, and we must move beyond it. It's about control of migration. It's always been about control. That is what people have voted for time and again. And look, they weren't just ignored after Brexit. The Tories gave them the exact opposite. An immigration system deliberately reformed to reduce control. Because in the end, they are the party of the uncontrolled market. Now, don't get me wrong. Markets are dynamic. Competition is a vital life force in our economy. This is a Labour Party proud to say that. We work hand in hand with business. But markets don't give you control. That's almost literally their point. So if you want a country with more control, if you want the great forces that affect your community to be better managed, whether that's migration, climate change, law and order, or security at work, then that does mean more decisive government. And that is a Labour government. Taking back control is a Labour argument. It's why I say we're rebalancing our country to serve working people. Because this is a question of balance. We can't afford any more polluted rivers. We can't afford any more COVID contracts. We can't afford any more Grenfell Towers. We have to become serious and mission-led. Have to put respect and service deep in the bones of our institutions. That's not a debate about investment or reform. It's always been both. But again, I have to warn you. Working people do want a more decisive government. They do want us to rebuild our public services. And they do want that to lead to more control in their lives. But their pockets are not deep. Not at all. So we have to be a great reforming government. Our NHS reformed so patients have more control over their health. Our energy system reformed so our country has more control over its security. Police and justice reformed so communities have more control of their street. Education reformed so children have more control of their future. And our economy reformed with the unique force that is economic growth, giving every community the breathing space, the calm, the control to focus on the little things they love in life, not the anxiety and insecurity we have now. Because we do need joy. We do need that in our lives. And one place that has always done that for me, conference, I told you about it last year. It's the Lake District. A place that my mum loved, not just because of what it meant to her, her determination to show that she could walk in a place like that, but because of the beauty everywhere. And last year, I took my family to the old cottage where we used to stay as children in the Lake District. We walked up to the cottage, stood outside. It must have looked a little odd. And the couple who live there now, they came out. They were lovely. And when we told them why we were there, they said, well, come inside. Go upstairs. Take a walk down memory lane. So we did. Came back outside. We're chatting. And then the woman stopped suddenly and said, someone's nicking your car. And I said, no, that's the police moving the car. And that really confused her. Anyway, at this point, her husband comes in and he says, you haven't clocked, have you? He's the leader of the opposition, a politician. And she stopped, smiled, laughed, and said politely, if I'd known you were a politician, I'd have pushed you down the stairs when I had the chance. The beauty of the Lake District and the heart of the British people in a nutshell. But seriously, when you're walking around in a place like the Langdale Valley, when you can see the grass there, every bit as green as it was 14 years ago, it's a reminder and an inspiration that, yes, things change, and some things need to change, but some things do not. And the joy and wonder of our nation, the spirit of its people, the cleaners, the drivers, small business owners, teachers, teaching assistants, the people who came out and cleaned the streets, the brickies who rebuilt the broken walls in Southport, the backbone of this country, they are just as resilient as they were 14 years ago. And no matter what loudmouths say on social media, their values are the same. So we will turn our collar up and face the storm. We will rise above the challenges that we've inherited. Because this is a country with fairness in the water, that believes in justice, and that wants working people to be respected. And also for opportunities to be there for your children. Because, conference, one of the other things that gave me great joy as a kid, as well as the football, obviously, was the flute. Don't think you're expecting that, were you? But seriously, the flute gave me so many opportunities. My first ever trip abroad was to Malta with the Croydon Youth Philharmonic Orchestra. And I'm sure everyone here will know the feeling of being drawn in by music, getting lost in something bigger than yourself, or being moved by a book, a painting, a play. Even now, I turn to Beethoven or Brahms in those moments when, how to put it, the reviews aren't so good. I've got Shostakovich lined up for tomorrow. But these early encounters with art and culture, they change us forever. And we are brilliant at them in this country. Brilliant. But those opportunities don't go to every child, do they? My brother, who had difficulties learning, he didn't get those opportunities. Every time I achieve something in my life, my dad used to say to me, "Your brother has achieved just as much as you, Keir." And he was right. I still believe that. But this is what we do in this country, isn't it? We elevate the stories of the individuals who go to the Guildhall School of Music, the Prime Minister from a pebble-semi, the working-class few who do break through the class ceiling. I don't blame anyone for that. I am guilty of it. It gives hope to people. It's important to tell those stories. But it's not everyone, is it? And we must remember everyone, conference. Because everyone deserves the chance to be touched by art. Everyone deserves access to moments that light up their lives. And every child deserves the chance to study the creative subjects that widen their horizons, provide skills employers do value, and prepares them for the future, the jobs and the world that they will inherit. But more than that, every child, every person deserves to be respected for the contribution they make. My sister was a care... I think this guy's obviously got a pass from the 2019 conference. We changed the party.
So clearly a protester quite late on in the speech there, interrupting Keir Starmer's speech here in Liverpool.
A round of applause from the audience as he makes a joke that he was a Jeremy Corbyn era member of the party.
We've been changing the party. That's why we've got a Labour government. For conference. The point I was making is this. Every child, every person deserves to be respected for the contribution they make. My sister was a care worker in the pandemic. She is still a care worker. Work that surely by now we know is so important for the future of this country. So wouldn't it be great? So, conference, wouldn't it be great if this was always and also a country where, because of that contribution, that vital, life-affirming work, she could walk into any room and instantly command the same respect as the Prime Minister? Because those are my values, that is what I believe, and those are the values of the Britain that we will build. What will people get to show for it? They will get a country with its future back, renewed by respect and service, rebalanced towards the interests of working people, confident in its values and story, because together we took action. Millions who feel better off, without just being told they're better off by politicians, going to the supermarket without a calculator, because the nation's numbers now add up. More